When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
And welcome to the Plant School Podcast. I'm Rachel Tenney, and here we learn all about plants, how they work, how to care for them, and it's all taught in a way that anyone, from beginner to expert, can listen to, understand, and enjoy. So I hope that you will join me in Plant School. Hello, and welcome to the Plant School Podcast. Today's episode is one that I'm really excited for. I didn't know how fun this plant would be. I did an episode a while ago. It was episode 60, and it was just in general about carnivorous plants, kind of like an introduction to them. So if you haven't listened to the episode, that one was also a really good listen. But this one today, we are just talking about the Venus flytrap, and there is so much fun and good information about this plant. Not only is it so rich in history, there's a lot that goes into caring for this plant. Before I dive into all that good stuff, I do want to announce our giveaway winners. I do this every episode. I pick two people to win a free plant. These plants are supplied by a greenhouse that is local to me, jumping into the e-commerce space. If you want to check them out, and I highly recommend you do, go to onlinegardencenter.store and see what kind of houseplants they are offering. And they ship all over the US. So for my giveaway winners, I pick someone that has responded on Spotify to the most recent episode. There's a little question underneath every single episode. It's just for fun. There's no right or wrong answers. And so if you've responded to the most recent episode, that's where I'm choosing that from. And then over on Apple Podcasts, if that is where you're listening, I pick a review there. So let's begin with Spotify. Last episode, I asked you guys, would you ever consider doing landscape design work? Because if you remember, I interviewed Danelle and talked to her about being a freelance landscape designer. I always love these kind of questions because I feel like I get to know you as my listener a little bit better. And so it was fun seeing that a lot of you were considering it. Some of you are in school for it. And then there were some of you that said, no, not really my thing. And that's totally fine. But it was so fun just seeing the variety of answers that I got. But for today's winner, I chose randomly, and the winner is John. He said, yes, it's been a while, but I did the classic lawnmower service as a teen one summer, and I surprisingly enjoyed it. I would even pull garden weeds as a free bonus just because I liked it, lol. That's so nice. That is the extra mile, I'm sure, that made your client so happy. So John, if that was you that left that response, email me at tennyplants@gmail.com. That's tennyplants@gmail. And then over on Apple Podcasts, someone who has left a review. Today's winner is Terrary Yum. It's spelt with a Y-U-M, Terrary Yum. They said, I've listened to a lot of plant podcasts with a lot of the same information. This podcast immediately felt so fresh. I love the different planty topics this podcast has, as well as the new information I am learning from familiar topics and plant species. This is definitely my new binge obsession. Thank you so much for that kind review. That makes me so happy to hear that you have enjoyed listening. I enjoy making this podcast, so I'm glad that there are people out there who love listening to it because this is so fun for me. So if that was you, Terrary Yum, go ahead and email me at tennyplants@gmail.com and I will set you up with your free plant. If you would like to win a free plant on the next episode, then if you are listening on Spotify, respond to the question down below this episode. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, simply submit a review and you are entered in to win a free houseplant of your choice. All right, let's finally dig in. Like I said, I'm so excited. So I always start each episode that's a care guide with the question of, what is this plant? So in this case, what is a Venus flytrap? It may surprise you, but the answer is a bit long because there's so much to this plant that I wanted to cover just to describe what it is and how it works. There's a lot going on. So bear with me for this question, but there's a lot of really fun stuff here. So if you aren't familiar with the Venus flytrap, it is a carnivorous plant. It has these specialized reddish-green leaves, and they act as traps for small insects. Insects are attracted to the nectar produced in these traps and the color. That red color, it contains anthocyanin pigments. That's what makes it red, and the edges of the lobes are what secrete the mucilage to digest the insects. And we'll talk a little bit more about what exactly the mucilage contains in order to digest the insects. So the scientific name of the Venus flytrap is Dionaea muscipula, and it's in the Drosseraceae family or the sundew family. Venus flytraps are actually really closely related to the waterwheel plant. And the waterwheel plant, it has traps that are similar to the Venus flytrap, but they are underwater and they are usually catching aquatic invertebrate, very small ones. The Venus flytrap is also closely related to the cosmopolitan sundews. So if you've never seen a Venus flytrap, they kind of grow in a rosette pattern. The leaves do, and they can get up to 18 inches tall, that's 45 centimeters, and spread about 6 inches or 15 centimeters. So they are relatively small, and those dimensions are quite large, especially for those that you might find at the store or in your home. They usually have about 5 to 10 stems, and each one will have what looks like a little mouth with teeth, and it can close shut when those sensor hairs or those trichomes are touched. Again, we will talk about those in a second. So Venus flytraps, they actually do flower. They flower perennially. That means they flower every year. And those flowers, they are white with these green veins, and the pollinated flowers will create seeds. Though propagating by seed is quite tricky. Again, that is something I want to discuss with you guys. This is just our intro. There are different varieties of the Venus flytrap. Some of the popular ones are Red Dragon, King Henry, Gremlin, Big Mouth, and B52. Some of these just have different variations of color, such as Red Dragon. It's completely red, whereas the other ones, they have bigger traps than others do. So let's talk about just for a second how these traps work. I kind of want to set this foundation before we keep moving on, and it's also really interesting. So these traps, they have the jaw-like clamping structure formed at the very end of each leaf on this plant. And what causes them to trigger is vibrations from the prey's movement, whether that's an ant or a fly, but those jaws will trigger shut. The movement is called thigmonasty, and all that is, thigmonasty is just a non-directional plant response to being touched. I think we talked about nictinasty when we were talking about prayer plants or maranta plants. They will kind of fold up at nighttime, and that movement's called nictinasty. So for some reason, they all end with nasty. I will have to dig into why, but for the Venus flytrap, it's thigmonasty. So when an insect comes along, in order for the Venus flytrap to close the trap, the insect must touch two or more sensor hairs. These hairs are trichomes that resemble hairs, and they have to touch two or more within 20 seconds. Once that has occurred, then the trap will quickly shut. And this is interesting, but the speed at which your trap shut, it depends on the humidity, depends on the light, the size of the prey, and just its general growing conditions. And actually, the speed at which your trap closes is a really good indicator of your plant's overall health. So if it is very slow, that means your plant is not very healthy. But if it's quick, the plant is good. It's doing great, it's healthy. And this 20-second rule that these bugs kind of have to fit in for the trap to close, this seems to be an evolved trait, and it's evolved simply to prevent triggering on something that has no nutritional value, like a raindrop, or maybe just some grass brushing by in the wind. That is why there is this 20-second rule. And it also sets up an example that plants do have memory, though that memory is very short. I also did a whole episode about plants having memory. I did this series of like, can plants hear? Can they see? Do they have a memory? Do they have feelings? It was so much fun to do. I love doing those episodes. So the one about memory, I'm going to look it up right now so I can tell you guys if you're interested in learning more about how plants have memory. I called them my plant myth or not episodes. So let's see. I am just scrolling back. Oh, there it is. So it's episode 96. And yeah, the title of it is Plant Myth or Not, Do Plants Have Memories? And I talk quite a bit about the latest research on that kind of stuff, on if plants have memories, one of which that was heavily studied is the Venus flytrap for the reason that it can close and process these 20-second intervals of if one of these trichome hairs is touched. So surprisingly, going back to these traps, the process by which the Venus flytrap shuts is actually still not very well understood. There is one theory that is widely accepted. It's called the acid growth theory, where hydrogen ions are being rapidly exchanged to close the trap. And that's the thought of how the traps work. So once it has captured an insect, those trigger hairs, the trichomes, they actually also possess a heat sensor. So if the sensors detect heat, they start secreting digestive enzymes to eat the insect. And these heat sensors can also cause the traps to close in times of intense heat, like in the summertime. Or it can help them survive extreme weather such as fires. So this kind of gives them advantage over other plants. They can kind of protect themselves during those times of intense heat. And if the insect or the prey escapes through the small gaps of the trap will actually reopen in 12 hours. Since the cost of enzymes isn't worth it, the plant has detected that there is no prey, and it knows it's not going to secrete those enzymes and waste them. But if the prey is larger and it moves around in the trap will actually tighten more and digestion begins more quickly. So it's kind of telling the plant, I'm wiggly, I'm worth it, and you should start digesting me. So the diet of a Venus flytrap, I'm going to break it down for you. I thought this was really fun. So in the wild, the Venus flytrap's diet is 33% ants, 30% spiders, 10% beetles, and 10% grasshoppers, with fewer than 5% flying insects, which is so interesting because I always imagine the Venus flytrap, eating flies. But in fact, it is mostly eating ants. We should call it the Venus ant trap. What are we doing? Or the Venus spider trap. That sounds pretty cool, honestly, in my opinion. But the Venus flytrap goes after these bugs because they are able to supply it nutrients. And it's giving itself an evolutionary advantage over their ancestral sticky traps, which couldn't catch insects such as the ant or spider. They were a little too big for their sticky trap ancestors. So if you're like me, you might be wondering exactly how the Venus flytraps digest these insects, especially when some of them, like beetles, have really tough shells. So one of the enzymes that is released by the Venus flytrap, it's called GH18 chitinase. And this is the enzyme that breaks down that chitin-containing exoskeleton of the insect. So it can actually eat away at that hard shell if it is a beetle or if it is another bug that has a hard exoskeleton. And then, of course, there's a mixture of other enzymes that eat away at the insects. And it takes about 10 days for the Venus flytrap to reduce that insect to just a simple husk. And then after it is finished, the trap will reopen. All right, that was it for my segment about what a Venus flytrap is. I know that was so much, but I'm telling you, wasn't that good? It was good stuff. So let's move on to what they symbolize. This is kind of the fun stuff. We're going to get into what they symbolize and then where they came from and their history. There's some really fun pop culture references that are coming up. So starting off with what they symbolize, the plant's common name refers to Venus, the Roman goddess of love, and the genus name refers to the Greek goddess Aphrodite, who is the daughter of Dione. And the species name, Muscupula, is Latin for both mousetrap, which is derived from the word moose or mouse, and decipula is Latin for trap. So historically, the plant was also known by the slang term tippy twitchet or tippity twitchet, and there are two possible different references from which this slang term came from. It's honestly, it's kind of a fun name. The references, one of them is kind of strange, but the other one makes a little bit more sense. But anyways, the term tippity twitchet is similar to the term tippet de witchet, which derives from tippet and witchet, which is the archaic term for a woman's reproductive parts. But in contrast, the English botanist John Ellis, who gave the plant its scientific name in 1768, he gave it the name Dionea muscipula. He wrote that the plant was named Tippity Witchet, and it was an indigenous word from either the Cherokee or the Catawba tribes. And this is according to the Handbook of American Indians, and Tippity Witchet actually was derived from the word Titipi Witchik, and that translates to the leaves which wind around or involve. So some other symbolism that the Venus flytrap holds is that they can represent persistence due to them staying closed even after missing a fly, and they can also symbolize courage, strength, instinct, and intuition. There was a lot of other symbolism, but these were the main ones that I kept running across. Sometimes I wonder who makes up the symbolism, if anyone is. I have this book that I always refer to, and I love it. It's called The Language of Flowers, and oftentimes all the plants, you know, in the world are not in it. So the Venus flytrap wasn't in it. So I had to look at different references, and some of the websites, man, I'm like, who wrote this? It just felt like a blog post by some guy just chilling and looking at his Venus flytrap and popping these out of his head. So that is why I kind of just stuck to the ones that I kept running across, just to avoid spreading around just someone's simple opinion, I guess. But if you are ever wanting to convey the message to someone that they are courageous, have strength and instinct and intuition, the Venus flytrap is a great one for that. So let's move on to where they originate. They are actually native to the Carolinas, which are in the USA, North Carolina and South Carolina. Specifically, they are native to the 60-mile or 100-kilometer radius of Wilmington, North Carolina. So if you kind of drew a circle around Wilmington, North Carolina, that is where you will find Venus flytraps in their native habitat. And I love this because I feel like every houseplant that I cover is never native to the U.S. It's just not a very tropical place. So to have the Venus flytrap native is, it's kind of exciting. So they're usually found on sandy peat soil among scattered pines in North Carolina. And actually, there are two other populations that are found, though they are not native to these regions. So there's a naturalized population found in northern Florida, and there is an introduced population in western Washington. So you can find them there as well. But all of these environments, they are very nitrogen and phosphorus poor. And that doesn't really matter to the Venus flytrap because they don't rely on the soil for nutrition. They rely on insects. And I mentioned this before, but Venus flytraps handle fires really well. And they actually depend on fires to get rid of its competition. So fire suppression, you know, when humans are out there fighting fires and getting rid of them from the moment they happen, actually ruins the Venus flytrap's future out in the wild because they need those fires coming in. They also tolerate mild winters. They require a period of dormancy if you want them to survive freezing temperatures and low photoperiods. Photoperiods are just hours of sunlight. And that is where they come from. That's an overview of where they like to live in their native environment. So let's move on to their history. My literal favorite part of all these care guide episodes. So the Venus flytrap, the very first known written record was a letter from the North Carolina governor, Arthur Dobbs. He lived in Brunswick Town, and he wrote to botanist Peter Collinson in London. This was on April 2nd, 1759, and he told Collinson about a tiny but amazing insectivorous plant. It was only found in the moist, longleaf pine savannas and swamplands within a 90-mile radius of present-day Wilmington, North Carolina, like we talked about. And he wrote, "We have a kind of catch-fly sensitive, which closes upon anything that touches it. It grows in latitude 34, but not in 35. I will try to save the seed here." And later in 1769, there was an English naturalist that came along. His name was John Ellis, and he included an illustration in a letter to the great Swedish botanist. You might recognize his name, Carl Linnaeus, the father of binomial nomenclature, or the two naming system for plants and all living things, really. And he described this plant to Linnaeus, and he said it was a rat trap with teeth. Not very accurate with the rat trap part. Again, we're missing out. It should have been called a spider trap. But much later on, this was in 1875, someone famously described this plant. It was Charles Darwin, probably one of the most famous naturalists in history, and he described the Venus flytrap as one of the most wonderful in the world. And if you are familiar with Charles Darwin, he did a lot of research with carnivorous plants. And so I'm sure he spent a lot of time with the Venus flytrap. The Venus flytrap is used in herbal remedies today. It's used for HIV, Crohn's disease, skin cancer, though all of these have no scientific evidence behind them to support those claims, but it is still used. And today, there is only about 3 to 10% of the Venus flytrap's native habitat that is surviving. So they did a large-scale survey in 2019. It was conducted by the North Carolina Natural Heritage Program. There was an estimated total of 302,000 individuals, like individual Venus flytraps, remaining in the wild. And this represents a huge reduction because in 1979, they did the same thing. And guess how many they found? They found 4,500,000 individual Venus flytraps. That is a 93% reduction, which is so sad. And to just further show you this problem that's going on, in 1958, they did a study and found that there were 259 historic sites that had Venus flytraps, like areas. And they revisited these in 2016, and only 71 had Venus flytraps still in them in the wild. So 259 down to 71. And of these 71 sites, only 20 of them were classified as having excellent or good long-term viability. So this is extremely sad. Due to this scarcity, they are endangered in the wild, and collection from the field is absolutely illegal. Please do not do it. It became illegal in 1958, and in 2014, so pretty recently, it became a felony to go out and collect Venus flytraps. And surprisingly, or maybe not surprisingly, because humans are dumb, I guess, I don't know a better way to describe it, there's still a demand for wild Venus flytraps. And there was even a 2016 New York Times article that reported that it has led to a Venus flytrap crime ring. It's a real thing. Like, no joke. One man got caught. Actually, quite a few people have been caught. But one man, this was notable because of how much he took. He received 17 months in prison because he was found poaching 970 Venus flytraps. Where did he even put them all? I don't know. I'm not involved in the Venus flytrap crime ring, in case you were wondering. But moving on from the illegality of this plant in the wild, in 2005, it was named as the North Carolina State Carnivorous Plant. Didn't even know that was a category. Does every state have a state carnivorous plant? I don't know. Maybe something to look up. But the Venus flytrap has appeared in so many different forms of media. So it's been in movies and books and television shows. For example, maybe the most well-known one is the movie Little Shop of Horrors. It's also a very common play. And the plant is portrayed as a larger-than-life, you know, carnivorous plant. And it demands to be fed human blood. I've honestly never seen this movie or watched the play. I probably should. Although I really hate anything that is horror-like. I don't know if this movie is more satirical or more on the horror side. I guess I could just find out and watch it. But anyway, some other references. Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, who is the author of Sherlock Holmes, in 1880 he wrote The America's Tale, and it was a short story that centered around a man who was killed by a massive Venus flytrap in the Arizona wilderness. I don't think there's very many happy, fun stories in pop culture that involve Venus flytrap. It's kind of a spooky plant. So other references to pop culture, they include being featured in movies like The Emperor's New Groove, Fantastic Mr. Fox, Journey to the Center of the Earth, Jumanji, Minority Report, Star Trek, Jimmy Neutron, The Simpsons. There's so many that feature the Venus flytrap. It was even featured in a Taco Bell commercial in 2003. And more recently, and many of you may be familiar with the Netflix series Wednesday with, Jenna Ortega. That show actually has a greatly enlarged Venus flytrap in episode 2 during a carnivorous plant class. So it is literally everywhere in pop culture. I would say the Venus flytrap is probably the most well-known carnivorous plant, so I can see why it is so featured in our books and our movies and our shows. So let's move on to kind of the second half of this episode, which is how to care for this plant. If you have one, if you're thinking about getting one, I'm going to give you everything you need to know of how to keep it alive. And there's a lot of really interesting information in this half of the episode as well, even if you don't have one. I recently got one from Walmart because it was like $2, and I've always wanted to try. I should have done this episode before I bought it, but I didn't, okay? And so I learned a lot while I researched, but it was so funny because I did this grocery run, got the Venus flytrap, and I picked up one of my sons on my way home because he was done with school, and I told him, like, hey, I got a Venus flytrap. Like, remember talking about those? They kind of look like piranha plants from Mario. He's in kindergarten, and he just, like, yanked up his little feet onto his seat, and he's like, where is it? He was so scared that this plant was going to somehow eat his shoe. I don't know, but I could tell that he was pretty terrified that I had this plant in the car that could snap shut. Thankfully, it's nothing like the movies that we just talked about, and it can't do any of that. But let's talk about how to care for it. Sorry, that was a little tangent, but let's start with how to water it. So because it is native to kind of wet, boggy areas, they do like lots of moisture. In fact, this is one plant that drainage isn't really a key factor to it surviving like other tropical houseplants because it does like the sitting moisture. A lot of people actually set it in a saucer of water. They like to bottom water it, but you can top water. That is not the only way that you must go about it. So it's recommended to keep the soil moist, not soggy, and try and keep the humidity up by either using a humidifier or by surrounding it with other plants. And Venus flytraps actually do prefer distilled, filtered, or rainwater because those three types of water have a lower pH compared to tap water, and they can be very picky about it. This is a picky plant when it comes to water. If the traps are starting to turn green and floppy, it is a sign that your plant isn't very happy with how you're watering it or with the humidity. So you can remedy this by increasing the humidity and making sure that you are watering to keep the soil moist, or else it will die fairly quickly if these things are out of whack. They don't require as much humidity as some other carnivorous plants, such as your sundews and pitcher plants. So that is one nice thing about Venus flytraps. They're a little less picky on how much humidity they need. Moving on to sunlight and their lighting needs, they do prefer bright indirect sun and also direct sun. So a lot of people recommend about 6 hours of direct sun, which is quite a bit. So that's its ideal. But if it is coming from a big box store like mine did, it came from Walmart, it needs to be acclimated because usually it is not used to that amount of sunlight. And I can attest, It was in a sad little corner of their greenhouse section, and I am sure it was not getting any direct sun. And if you can't provide direct sun, you can use a grow light to provide the lighting that it needs. And the reason why it needs this amount of sun is because in their native habitat, they are full sun plants. They have about 10% or less of canopy cover, so something growing above it, 10% or less, so hardly any at all. So they do need that direct sun, though it may take some time for them to get used to that, but that is where they thrive. And the coloring of the Venus flytrap is actually a really good indicator of if they are getting enough sun. So if they are completely green, then it means they are not getting enough sun. If they get too much sun, the traps will turn yellow, brown, or black very suddenly, and you should acclimate the plant slowly to a sunnier spot over like a week or so. But in general, you want that red and green coloring. That is a sign of a healthy plant. They do prefer a room that's between 45 to 70 degrees Fahrenheit, 7 to 21 degrees Celsius. And in the winter, they do well in unheated rooms around 45 degrees Fahrenheit or 7 degrees Celsius. So they can be grown outside if you do have more mild weather, and they can usually handle anything ranging from 20 to 90 degrees Fahrenheit, that's negative 6 to 32 degrees Celsius, and usually only like a few days below freezing. If you have a ton of days below freezing, the Venus flytrap usually can't handle more than 3 to 4 at a time. And speaking of like freezing temperatures, Venus flytraps, like I mentioned, they do have a period of dormancy when it is colder and there's less sun. It's normal for during this period for traps to die because the plant is going dormant. New traps will come in after winter, so don't be alarmed. Most professionals actually recommend dormancy. You want to kind of force your plant into this if you are keeping it inside full time, because if you don't, they may get a little more needy as time goes on. They may require more light, more water, and more food to remain healthy. So during dormancy, they prefer a really cool room and less water. And once winter is over, you want to move it to a lighter and warmer spot. Some people who don't have a cold room to do this in, they will actually take out their Venus flytrap, they will wrap the roots in moss and place them in a plastic bag and put them in the refrigerator. And they leave them there from October to February. And when it's done in February, they take them out, they repot them, boom, bada, bing, they've gone through dormancy. So if you're really dedicated and want to force it into that, that is one option that you can do. Let's move on to how to fertilize your Venus flytrap. And this actually one, you don't need to fertilize it. It gets all its nutrients from the insects. So basically its fertilizer is the bugs that it's catching. If it's not able to catch any insects indoors, place it outside for a few days on a nice day during those warmer months. And though they can technically survive without bugs, it's really not recommended. Most experts recommend feeding them with live or dead insects 1 to 2 times a month. It is preferred to use a live bug and try to get bugs without the hard shell. So kind of avoid beetles if you can, because some have reported that this can cause the trap to die. That hard shell can actually damage the trap. If we go back to their diet, seems like ants and spiders are what you should be going with. That was like 63% of their diet. All right, let's move on to how to repot your Venus flytrap or what kind of soil needs it has. They do really well in sphagnum moss and perlite or peat moss. Or you can do kind of a mix of those with some silica sand, something that's very airy. Most big box stores use a soil, and it is recommended to switch them to the preferred medium, sphagnum moss or perlite or the peat moss. I can attest that mine came in soil, and yes, I am working on switching it to some sphagnum moss that I have. I will get on that. It's best to repot them in early spring so they can bounce back with the lots of sunny conditions that are coming in spring and summer. So honestly, this is the perfect time for me to be doing it because it is currently end of March. So this is a great time to be repotting for me. Moving on to how to prune one. You want to be cutting off dead traps when they come along. Most people recommend only doing it when they are brown or black. Also, it's recommended to cut off any flowers that come. This is because they can weaken the plant. They divert energy away from the traps. So most people will just cut them off. It's up to you, but they will usually flower in the summertime. And let's talk about how to propagate them for a second. There's actually a lot of ways to do this. You can do it by seed, although this is kind of the long way about it. It's really not recommended. It takes 4 to 5 years for the plant to reach maturity. So this is something that hardly anyone will go this route. A more simpler way is division. So the way you would do this, you kind of look for offshoots that are developing away from the base of the plant. You can remove them. You can use a sharp knife to kind of remove them, but try to ensure that they have a good clump of roots that are still attached. And then you can pot them up into that moss and perlite mix, ensuring that they stay moist until they are able to establish themselves. So that's how you would do it by division, much more popular among hobbyists. But when it comes to a supplier of Venus flytraps propagating, their most common way is actually tissue culture. So they take very small pieces of the plant, put them in a petri dish in kind of this gel-like growing medium, and they propagate them on a huge scale via tissue culture. Not so very common from like a hobbyist standpoint. It's pretty hard to have that successfully happen. And then lastly, another way is by their leaves. You can propagate them by leaf cuttings. It's recommended to do this in early summer. So you can pull out a leaf. You want to remove the entire leaf. It's recommended to have a tiny bit of the rhizome at the end. That's the underground stem. And then you insert that leaf, or several of them, depending on what you want to do, into a small pot filled with well-drained potting medium, like that moss that we talked about. And you can put that pot in a plastic bag to keep it really moist and from drying out. And then the leaf is going to turn black and die, and you're going to trim it off. But about 6 months later, there will be a tiny but recognizable Venus flytrap that will appear. And if you did several in a pot, you will have several coming up, and you can separate them at that point, or you can keep them all together depending on what you are going for. All right, I have three last things I want to talk about. First thing is pests, and if the Venus flytrap even gets any, because they can kind of eat those insects, right? Or you think they would. But they actually can get aphids, they can get spider mites and fungus gnats. And those three things, that's really hard for the Venus flytrap to catch because they are so small. It's not worth their time. If you happen to get any of those, you can remedy them with all the normal ways of using neem oil or wiping them off with rubbing alcohol or a soapy spray or using an insecticide. Or I kind of like this idea. You could get a sundew plant. So get another carnivorous plant, and that can help you take care of the fungus gnats. Maybe not so much the spider mites or aphids, but it can take care of your fungus gnats. Honestly, I think everyone should get a sundew plant if they're into houseplants, because fungus gnats kind of just come with the territory. And the fact that there's a plant that can get rid of them, I love it because it's just another reason to get another plant, right? All right, second to last thing, just some extra care tips. And honestly, I only have one. So if the traps aren't closing, you're trying to put some sort of bug into it, it could be that the trap has already spent its lifetime of closing, whether it was from eating insects or from curious fingers. It could be any of those things. They only close about 4 to 5 times in their lifetime. So really try not to poke them, because they don't have unlimited closing. It's only 4 to 5 times. And then my last little tidbit of information is, how long does a Venus flytrap live? This answer actually surprised me. The Venus flytrap can live for 20 to 30 years if they are cultivated in the right conditions. That blows my mind. I did not expect them to be so long living. I don't know if my Walmart one will make it that long, but because I did this episode, I have some high hopes that I can keep it alive for at least a few years, right? And hopefully, if you have one, you can keep it alive now after listening. And if you don't have one, maybe you want to get one now. because they are such an interesting plant. All right, guys, thank you so much for listening to today's episode. I hope you will join me in 2 weeks for a brand new episode of the Plant School Podcast. Thank you so much for being here and for listening to the Plant School Podcast. I hope that you will join me for our next episode. And if you would like to support this podcast and keep it going, there's a link down in the show notes of this episode where you can donate to this podcast. And I really appreciate all that help. Or you can go to my merch store, which is also linked in the notes of this episode, and you can find some really cool plant-related shirts and stickers. And if you want to support the podcast but spend no money, feel free to share it with a friend, leave a review. All these things greatly help me out and allow me to keep doing this. Again, thank you so much for listening and for being here at the Plant School Podcast.